this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
Isn't it true that we tend to just oftentimes think that sin is really not that bad? I mean, yes, of course, I know that I shouldn't do this, but it's not that big of a deal. No, Jesus thinks differently, and he wants us to understand really the severity of sin.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his study in the Sermon on the Mount. Join us as Pastor Brian concludes his teaching on Matthew chapter 5, verses 27 through 30, in a message titled, Jesus and the Severity of Sin. Now, here's Pastor Brian.
The religious leaders should have known that anyway. The seventh commandment said, you shall not commit adultery. But the tenth commandment said, you shall not desire your neighbor's wife. So the tenth commandment even clarified that it was not just behavior, it was attitude that was also included. So this is what Paul is describing here. So he says, when the commandment came, in other words, when I understood the breadth and the depth of the commandment, sin revived and I died. All of a sudden, Paul says, I realize, oh, wait, I am a sinner. And he says, I died, meaning that sin slew him. So what Jesus is teaching here, just to sum it up, is that no one has kept the law and can therefore trust in their own righteousness for acceptance with God. That is part of what Jesus is doing here in this sermon. And remember, Jesus said to them, unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, you'll never enter the kingdom. This is what he's talking about. The righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees was that external righteousness. But Jesus said, your righteousness has to go beyond that. And it has to be a righteousness that is actually beyond your grasp. So Jesus is saying, you might never have committed the outward act of adultery or murder, but you have broken the command in your heart. We all have done that. He's forcing us to look beyond ourselves to the grace of God for salvation. So that's the first thing. Now, secondly, let's look at the second point. Jesus here is not removing the command. And this is where the application goes beyond the immediate listener, the Israelite, those who were already connected with the law. This is where the application goes to God's kingdom people. Jesus does not lower the standard for his kingdom people. He elevates it. So you see, Jesus brings clarity. He says, you have heard that it was said. This is what you've been thinking all along. But no, that's not the extent of it. This is what it actually means. And so he's raising the standard. As his people, we are not only going to keep ourselves from adultery, we are going to have our hearts renewed so that we do not look at one another lustfully, wondering how you can please me, but we look at each other purely wondering how we can honor one another and glorify God in our relationships. You see, this is what the life in the kingdom is supposed to look like. And this is why it's such a great, great travesty and a contradiction of the life of the kingdom when we find adultery in our midst. And sometimes, of course, we find adultery even among those who lead within the church. But when that's the case, it's a complete repudiation of what Jesus is actually teaching and what life in the kingdom is ultimately all about. Now, adultery, just for clarification, adultery is, here's a definition, a voluntary sexual encounter between a married man and someone other than his wife, or between a married woman and someone other than her husband. A voluntary sexual encounter. Now, there are still places today where adultery is illegal. But the definition of adultery, the legal definition of adultery, is sexual intercourse. But I think the biblical definition would be sexual encounter. See, because some people have said, well, you know, we actually never had intercourse, so I'm really not guilty of adultery. Well, whose interpretation of the law are you looking at? You might be looking at the state's interpretation there and saying, I'm fine. But when you look at God's understanding of what adultery is, any sexual encounter with a person that you are not married to. Now, again, just for clarification, adultery is very specific. It's dealing with unfaithfulness to the marital covenant. But there's also the term, and we read it earlier in the quote from the 15th chapter of Matthew, and the two are side by side, adultery, sexual immorality. So sexual immorality is oftentimes, the word that's translated sexual immorality is porneia, is the Greek word, but it's a very broad word, and it sort of just includes everything that is outside of what God permits. So adultery would be included in sexual immorality, but the distinct feature of adultery is that it is married people who are violating the covenant, where sexual immorality does not necessarily apply to married people. Sometimes the word porneia in the older translations, mostly it's translated fornication, which would then be defined as premarital sex. So just a clarification on that. Now, here's an interesting thing, though. Although adultery is often glorified in films and novels in such a way as to make it seem that everyone is either having an affair or going to have an affair, in the statistics actually tell a different story, amazingly, even presently. Now, if you watch TV or whatever you watch, network TV or Netflix or Prime or, you know, whatever. If you go to the cinema, you're going to get the feeling so often that everybody does adultery. It's just what everybody does. But the statistics are different. In the U.S., this kind of fascinated me, really. In the U.S., 60 to 70% of married couples remain faithful to each other throughout their lifetime. So 4 out of 10, 3 out of 10, I think that's interesting, considering what is so often presented to us. Adultery, universally, the betrayal of adultery is one of the most emotionally painful experiences anyone can go through. And even where there's, you know, the either blatant or subtle promotion of having an affair, whether it be through film or novels or whatever the case, you know, there's not a single person that is the victim of adultery that doesn't experience the pain of that betrayal. So even though it's so often presented as something, and sometimes you can read articles where the impression is being given like, hey, this is the next exciting thing for your life. Things have become bored, or you've become bored in your marital relationship. Have an affair. That's the way to spice everything up. The people who are writing that know that it isn't true, because adultery only always results in pain, and that pain is often extended beyond the victim to others, especially children, family, and even friends. Adultery has ruined friendships outside the marriage. This is the impact. So this is no doubt one of the reasons Jesus speaks such stern words of warning to those considering or engaging in adultery. Now look what Jesus then says, verse 29. He says, if your eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to go to hell. Now, what in the world is Jesus saying here? Now, let's just understand right up front, Jesus is using exaggerated speech here, intentionally. Jesus is speaking with hyperbole, and when you speak with hyperbole, it's to emphasize. It's an exaggerated statement. It's like when we say, gosh, I'm starving to death, and we just ate 3 hours ago. So we know we're not really starving to death, but we are hungry, and we want to express that. So Jesus often uses hyperbole. Pluck out your eye, cut off your hand. Jesus is not saying that anyone should ever literally do that. Now, a few Christians whose zeal greatly exceeded their wisdom have taken Jesus literally here and mutilated themselves. This has happened. One of the best-known examples, perhaps, is the 3rd-century scholar Origen of Alexandria. This man, Origen, he was so brilliant. He was truly a scholar. He was heretical in some areas as well, but he was indeed a brilliant person. But he went to extremes of asceticism. Asceticism is the practice of denying yourself any physical pleasure. So Origen went to extremes of asceticism. He renounced possessions, food. He renounced sleep. And in an over-literal interpretation of this passage, he made himself a eunuch. So his zeal exceeded his wisdom. Jesus never intended that we actually literally, physically do this. What is Jesus saying to us about dealing with sin? Well, remember this. Of course, Jesus knows better than anyone that gouging out an eye or cutting off a hand will not change a sinful heart. You know, this was the problem that began to surface I think still does exist in some cases in the ancient monasteries. In the monastery, the idea was that you would get yourself so far away from worldly types of things and temptation that you would no longer battle or struggle with these things. But what many in the monasteries began to discover is that it didn't matter how far out in the desert they were. It didn't matter how locked away from the world they had placed themselves. They still struggled with all of the desire internally. And of course, Jesus knows that. That's what he's saying in the context here. He's talking about that very thing. His point is to show that sin is so serious that no one can afford to let it go unchecked. So Jesus is using this really kind of jarring language to get people to wake up to the reality of how destructive sin is. Because isn't it true that we tend to just oftentimes think that sin is really not that bad? I mean, yes, of course, I know that I shouldn't do this, but it's not that big of a deal. Well, Jesus thinks differently. And he wants us to understand really the severity of sin. So his point is to show that sin is so serious that no one can afford to let it go unchecked. The answer is not gouging out your eye or cutting off your hand. The answer is heart renewal through a genuine commitment to following Jesus and living the way he's taught and shown us to live. That's the bigger picture of what the Bible teaches about all of this. And that's what Jesus is wanting to bring them to at this point, showing them that no one is righteous. No one has kept actually what God intended with the commandments. And therefore, no one can save themselves. We need salvation from outside. And that, of course, is what Jesus came to bring. Now, John Stott, the well-known British theologian who we quote quite often, John Stott, I think on a practical note, he had something good to say, because there is that place we have to recognize. There is that place where we cease our own efforts. We receive the grace of God. We are indwelt by the Spirit of God. And it's through that that we are able to walk in the Spirit and have the victory. But sometimes we mistakenly think that that excludes effort on our part, that it all just is automatically going to happen. But what we find is that, no, there still is a war. And maybe you remember in Paul's letter to the Galatians, he talks about that reality that we as God's people, although we are people of the Spirit, although we are born of the Spirit, although we are indwelt by the Spirit, we still have that human nature that is fallen to contend with. And so Stott here, I think, gives some good practical advice when it comes to our part in dealing with sin. And so he said this. He said, if your eye causes you to sin because temptation comes to you through the things you see, then don't look. The answer is not gouge out your eye. The answer is, for you as a believer, don't look. Or if it's your hand, the things you do that are causing you to sin, don't do it. Or, because in another context, Jesus adds your feet to this. Or if it's your feet, the places you go, don't go. And then he says this, behave as if you had actually cut off your hands and feet and were now crippled, so you can no longer do the things that you do or go the places you go. Then Stott says this, finally. He says, this is what it means to put to death the deeds of the flesh. Now, of course, this sermon was given in the ministry of Jesus, and foundational truths are laid out in this sermon, but so much of what is here is further developed and elaborated on as we go into the writings of the apostles. And so Paul would say to the Colossians, for example, that we are to mortify or to put to death. He would say this to the Romans as well. We are to put to death the deeds of the body. So there is that active element in our sanctification where we are taking the measures by the grace of God to stop looking, stop touching, stop going to the places where we have these temptations and these vulnerabilities. God gives us the strength to do that. In closing, it's interesting that Jesus uses adultery as a basis for talking very dramatically about sin. And I think he did that because adultery, in so many ways, illustrates the true destructive nature of sin. All around us, we see wreckage and brokenness caused by adultery. And I think one of the big problems that we often have is that we just fail to pause and think for a moment. Think of the people who have literally wrecked their lives and the lives of so many people around them because of an adulterous affair. And I've often wondered, like, you know, what if you would have just thought about that for just a few minutes before you went headlong into it? What if you could have just stopped and thought about where this is going to end up? You know, one of the most notorious adulterous relationships in all of history is recorded for us in the Bible. Remember the story of King David and Bathsheba? That is a story of adultery. David took a married woman to himself and had a sexual relationship with her. And David, this man who was God's man, this man who was blessed extraordinarily by God, at the pinnacle of his greatness, he foolishly indulges himself and he brings disaster on the rest of his life and his family. Wow. So I think Jesus, again, is using adultery here to show the severity of sin because the consequences are so real. And he wants us to understand that sin is not forbidden because God doesn't want you to enjoy your life. Sin is forbidden because God doesn't want you to destroy your life. And he knows that that's what sin will do. Here's the beautiful thing about the gospel. Jesus is able, even in a case of adultery, to forgive, to heal, and restore. He's in the business of doing that. Going back once again to that woman. When those men who wanted so desperately to put her to death for her sin, when they finally all had dropped their stones and walked away because they were all convicted in their own conscience, Jesus said, "Woman, where are your accusers? Has no one condemned you?" And she said, "No one, Lord." And he said, "Neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more." So even if we've sinned, even if we have committed adultery, God is able to forgive. He's able to heal. He's able to restore. If you have been the victim of adultery, God's grace is there for you as well to bring healing, to bring hope.
The month of June, Back to Basics Radio is offering a book titled The Surprising Genius of Jesus, What the Gospels Reveal About the Greatest Teacher by Peter J. Williams. Although the Bible is the best-selling book of all time, the authorship is often challenged. Debates surrounding whether the words of Jesus were truly spoken by him or if they were actually the creation of the gospel writers. Well, in his book, The Surprising Genius of Jesus, Peter J. Williams presents several arguments to prove the authenticity of the words of Jesus. As a test case, Peter J. Williams takes an in-depth look at the story of the prodigal son in Luke 15. He traces the cleverness and wisdom of the teaching of Jesus that displays his ability to relate Luke 15 to the broader story of the Bible. The storytelling of Jesus was able to confront the opponents of his time through complex layers and themes. And the powerful storytelling ability of Jesus is also available for discovery today. The book, The Surprising Genius of Jesus, will not only help you better understand the parable of the prodigal son, it will also help you to see Jesus in a way that you may never have seen him before. Find out what the Gospels reveal about the greatest teacher in history. the book The Surprising Genius of Jesus, what the Gospels reveal about the greatest teacher by Peter J. Williams, is our gift to say thank you for your donation to Back to Basics. So we encourage you to call us right now at 1-800-733-6443 or visit us online at backtobasicsradio.com. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue tomorrow with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the Sermon on the Mount. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.